This could be a little bit chaotic because the kids are in with us, but that's okay. I'm okay with that if you are. But history was never my favourite subject at school. I struggled with history. It seemed like a whole bunch of dates to me, and it just didn't really work. But I'm pleased to say there are people worse than me at history. And I've found three examples of history students and what they've actually written on their history exam papers. I've got three examples. They go from good to great. This is what their actual exam papers read. Abraham Lincoln became America's greatest president. Abraham Lincoln's mother died in infancy, and he was born in a log cabin, which he built with his own hands. Very clever. Secondly, gravity was invented by Isaac Walton. It is chiefly noticeable in autumn when the apples are falling off the trees. My personal favourite is this one. Johann Bach wrote a great many musical compositions and had a large number of children. In between, he practised on an old spinster which he kept in the attic. Bach died from 1750 to the present. Bach was the most famous composer in the world, and so was Handel. Handel was half German, half Italian, and half English. He was very large. So this morning we are celebrating Easter. This is Easter Sunday and it's the end of Holy Week. And it's a commemoration of the most important fact of history. So I want to talk a little bit about history this morning. The fact of Jesus' resurrection from the dead. So why is resurrection of Jesus the most important fact of history? Two short points. The resurrection makes Christianity unique among the world's religions. A question we often hear is, what is the difference between Christianity and all the other religions in the world? What is the difference? Well, firstly, Christianity is the only religion which stands or falls on whether its founder rose from the dead or not. No Buddhist claims that Buddha rose from the dead. No Jew claims that Abraham rose from the dead. No Muslim claims that Muhammad rose from the dead. It is the only religion in the world that stands or falls on whether its founder rose from the dead. Secondly, people pick and choose what they like about Christian teaching. Some may say, I like this about Christianity, but I'm not so keen on this. I like this doctrine, but that one is my favourite. I love the love of God, but I don't like the judgment of God. If Jesus rose from the dead, then you have to accept all he said. If he didn't rise from the dead, then why worry about any of what he said? That's a quote from a church theologian. In other words, if Jesus rose from the dead, he is in a category of one, and he has the authority of one that is unique, of anyone that's ever lived. In other words, you need to pay attention to him. If Jesus didn't rise from the dead, then this is a sham, we are deluded, and we might as well pack up and go home. History matters. Truth matters. Facts matter. So why believe in the resurrection of Jesus? Why believe in the resurrection of Jesus? N.T. Wright is one of the greatest New Testament scholars, and he did a massive, massive study on all the ancient religions. And he studied all the ancient manuscripts from before Jesus was born. He wrote a book called The Resurrection of the Son of God. And in his study, he was looking at texts from Egypt to Norway. He was looking at stories of gods that would rise and fall with spring and then die with autumn. It was an exhaustive and comprehensive study. But N.T. Wright points out that there is no story in the entire history of the world that speaks of a literal resurrection of a human being from the dead. A human being who died and now lives forever in a transformed body. In that, Christianity is unique. There is no other story or religion or belief that is centered on somebody that literally lived, literally died, and literally rose again. it stands alone amongst all the other beliefs, all the other philosophies, all the other religions. The resurrection of Jesus is a unique story in the history of the world. It is not a myth. It is an objective fact of history, open to the normal methods of historical research that we employ when studying things like World War I, Christopher Columbus, William the Conqueror. We can look back on that time and study it in the same way we study other moments of history. So where's the proof that the resurrection of Jesus is a fact of history? That's what I want to drill down into for the next couple of minutes. Matthew 28, 1 to 10. After the Sabbath, at dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. There was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven and, going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes were white as snow. The guards were so afraid of him that they shook and became like dead men. The angel said to the woman, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus who was crucified. He is not here, he has risen, just as he said. Come and see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples, he has risen from the dead and is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him. Now I have told you." So the women hurried away from the tomb, afraid yet filled with joy, and ran to tell his disciples. Suddenly Jesus met them. "Greetings," he said. I love that word. "Greetings." They came to him, clasped his feet and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee where they will see me." The first point I want to make is the unusual fact that the first eyewitnesses were women. Now that might not strike us as interesting today, but back then this is an extremely interesting point. First century Israel, first century Greco-Roman times was not egalitarian. It was not equal. Women were regarded with disdain. Women were considered as flighty, emotional, unreliable. Women weren't allowed to speak in a court of law. They weren't allowed to be a witness. There was no point or reason for the Bible to speak of women being the first eyewitnesses unless that's how it happened. If they were going to fabricate a story, women would not be the first eyewitnesses for that story. All four Gospels have women as the first eyewitnesses. More than that, all four Gospels has Mary Magdalene as the first eyewitness. The same Mary that in the Bible had seven demons expelled from her. Now, have you ever noticed in the Bible that it doesn't airbrush out the embarrassing details? The Bible doesn't gloss over the bits that we might like to omit if we were writing it. We see in the Bible Peter, the early church leader and great hero of the faith, denied that he knew Jesus Christ three times. A very embarrassing fact for Peter and for the early church. We see John, another early church leader and hero of the faith, wanting to call down lightning to eliminate the people that Jesus Christ came to save. The Bible never airbrushes out the embarrassing details. The reason the Bible records women as a first eyewitness is because that's how it happened. This account was not written to win friends and influence people. It's just how it happened. No possible advantage or reason to report it like this other than this is how it was. Women were the first eyewitnesses. That's my first point. The second point, the undeniable fact of an empty tomb. Verse 5 and 6. The angel said to the women, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus, who was crucified. He is not here. He has risen, just as he said. Come and see the place where he lay." John, the gospel writer, records that the burial clothes lay exactly where Jesus had been. It's like his body had passed up through them. The tomb was empty. There was nobody there. One of the towering legal scholars of the 20th century was Cambridge-educated Sir Norman Anderson. He was a genius. He was an academic. He lectured at Princeton University He was offered a professorship for life at Harvard University, and he served as the Dean of the Faculty of Law at the University of London. He knew his onions. Sir Norman Anderson, after a lifetime of analysing the evidence for the resurrection of Jesus, said, and I quote, "The empty tomb, then, forms a veritable rock on which all rationalistic theories of the resurrection has dashed themselves in vain." In other words, what he's saying is, every alternative to believing in the resurrection has to contend with this one indisputable, undeniable fact of history. The tomb of Jesus is empty. There's no body in the tomb. The disciples could not have preached in Jerusalem, just a stone's throw from where Jesus was crucified, where he breathed his last. They could not have preached the risen Jesus in Jerusalem unless it was true. The story of the early church didn't rise in some distant, far-off land where there were no eyewitnesses. It happened in the very same city that Jesus was crucified. If stories of Jesus' resurrection were false, somebody surely would have dragged out his dead body and paraded him around the streets. Yet that never happened. So what were some of the Jewish people saying in response to the Christians' claim that Jesus had risen? 11 to 15. While the women were on their way, some of the guards went into the city and reported to the chief priests everything that had happened. When the chief priests had met with the elders and devised a plan, they gave the soldiers a large sum of money, telling them, "You are to say, 'His disciples came during the night and stole him away while we were asleep.' If this report gets to the governor, we will satisfy him and keep you out of trouble." So the soldiers took the money and did as they were instructed. And this story has been widely circulated among the Jews to this very day. The Jews did not say that his disciples were drunkards. The Jews did not say that his disciples were liars. They didn't deny the empty tomb. Instead, they tried to explain away the empty tomb. They tried to explain that Jesus had been stolen by his disciples. There is this stubborn, indisputable fact of history, and that is that the tomb was empty. His body wasn't found. So we have the unusual fact of women being the early eyewitnesses. We have the undisputable fact of the tomb being empty. Now we have the utterly unlikely fact that the disciples stole the body, as some believed. This is a picture of a first century Palestinian tomb. Not the tomb, but a tomb that was similar to that that Jesus would have been laid in. The way they worked is they had a large disc that rolled in a groove downhill to seal the door. And then there was another stone put behind that stone. Suffice to say, it was a secure place to lay a body. The tomb was secure. It was a capital offence in Rome to tamper with a tomb. You would be killed for touching a sacred tomb. More than that, guards were posted on this tomb because they expected trouble. They expected opposition. So did the disciples really steal the body, as some suggested? Is that really likely? I put to you that there is absolutely no advantage, politically, socially, legally, physically, economically, no advantage whatsoever to being a follower of Jesus in the first century. More than that, if you claimed to follow Jesus, all you could look forward to was social rejection, economic disaster, and physical torture. Now, we have kids in here, so I'm not going to go into details. But to be a follower of Jesus would land you literally in hot water. I think some of you understand what I'm saying. People might be willing to die for something in which they believe, but I would bet anything that people would never die for something which they consider to be a lie. I don't think that's likely. I don't think that's reasonable to believe in. You can search all of history, You can look at the early church fathers, the early church heroes, those that believed and professed a faith in Jesus Christ, that went under scrutiny, went under pressure, went under extreme physical torture. Not one of them cracked under pressure and said, okay, I give up. It's a lie. It's not true. Not one of them. They were willing to pay the ultimate price for something in which they utterly, completely believed. So 3 points. 3 short points. Women were the first eyewitnesses. An unlikely account, unless that's how it happened. There was an empty tomb. Nobody ever paraded around the dead body of Jesus. And thirdly, would the church really explode in the way that it did? Would it really grow? Would it really flourish? Would it really boom in the way that it did? If they believed that it was a sham, it was a lie. Let me wrap this up. Christianity is based on a person that lived, that died, and that rose again. It isn't an irrational leap of faith, but it's a documented moment in history, within the Bible and outside the Bible. Christmas is good, but Easter is great. Everybody that lives was born. Jesus is unique among us all. He lived, he died, and he rose again. So if Jesus is risen from the dead, if he is unique in all of world history, if he stands in a category of one, then this one man indeed is the saviour of the world. He's the Lord of all creation. And it means that we're going to have to do something with this man. It's all or nothing. All or nothing. Let's stand.